sleeping under the trees. Thought I moved far enough away that you would never pine for me. But you arrived like July, hot as the sun. It's 101 when you're 101. In the dark days of summertime, I can't get no relief. Jumped in the river and I let it cool me down, but I still have a fever because you're still around. If I were ice in your hands, I'd turn liquid. I know it's hard to keep your cool, baby, when it's 101, when you're 101, when you're 101. Welcome, everyone, to KVNF's Talk and Music program. Today, we have a couple of guests on the show that yesterday I had never heard, an impromptu show at the Blue Sage last night, the little kind of house concert kind of deal. And now I'm aware, and now all of you will soon be aware. We have David Jacob Strain and also Michelle McAfee in the studio with us today. Thank you so much for being here. And that was an amazingly beautiful tune. Michelle, that was one of your songs.
Yes, it was.
So you guys have just, you're on a tour together. You're individual artists. This isn't something that you've, have you toured before together?
No, this is our first tour together, so.
But you've known each other for
5 years?
Yeah, we
years?
Met at a barn party in the Williams Valley in Southern Oregon, and I was playing with my band, and Michelle came and sang, and I heard her voice. I went, wait a second, who's that? Where is that voice coming from? And at that time, you hadn't made a record, but you'd been a professional songwriter.
Right, for right? years, yeah. And I had been wanting to make a record for a lot of years, and after my time in Nashville in L.A. as a staff songwriter, I took some time off, and when I met David, I hadn't yet found the right people yet to make the record. And yeah, we jammed after that show, and David was like, oh, well, we should make a record. And I was like, yes, we should. And so David helped produce and played all over my first record, Up in the Air.
So if you could kind of give maybe a nice sort of deal about where you came from. Yeah, a little background okay. on each yeah. of you.
You know, Michelle and I met in Oregon, which is where I grew up, and we always sort of joke that I'm from Oregon, the home of the blues. But I started playing guitar when I was 9, and I heard Taj Mahal play, and I really didn't know what style of music that was. You know, actually, it was a lot of styles. It was blues and soul. But the thing that knocked me out is he was up there with one guitar and one voice, and it sounded like more than a band. It was like an orchestra. And I wanted to make that sound before I even knew what to call it. I didn't know theory. I wasn't thinking about songs or writing songs. I just wanted, it was the sound and the feel of the sound. But Michelle, you live in Oregon now, but you grew up in Colorado and Montana, is that?
Yeah, I grew up originally in the mountains between Coal Creek Canyon and Nederland. And when I was 12, my parents moved us to Northwest Montana, where we homesteaded up there between Kalispell and Libby off of Highway 2. And both of my parents were musicians. My dad was an amazing accordion player and keyboard player and guitar player. My mom played bass. And we actually started a family band. My brother learned drums. My dad, forbid, bought him a drum kit. he's a year younger than me. And my mom and I sang harmonies. We sang really tight harmonies. And so in high school, instead of like going to Kagers with my friends and stuff, I was playing shows, playing gigs with my folks in Northwest Montana. And then
I love the story of you wanted to like backpack by yourself or head out on
the
trail.
We lived at the southern entrance to the Cabinet Mountain Wilderness, which is the wilderness where in Glacier National Park, when they had problem bears that were unafraid of humans, they would tranquilize them and helicopter them, or however they transported them, to the Cabinet Wilderness and dump them off there. And so these habituated bears would wake up really angry, not knowing where they are, and that was my backyard. That was my stomping grounds. And so I worked on a ranch for a while that exercised kind of the fall hunting horses. And I used to ride them up in the trails in the mountains. And Dad forbid me to take the job unless I would wear a 44.
And what happened? How did you go from like being from Montana and then all of a sudden you're a staff writer?
Well,
how did that happen?
I had $600 and a Malamute Husky 125-pound dog that was in the back of my truck and a guitar. And I was just going to go visit and check it out. And I was going to stay maybe 2 weeks. And I got down there. And it was so hot, that dog was utterly miserable, and he was bred for Iditarod races, right? And so, you know, after about the third day of him laying under my truck and just looking utterly miserable, and I remember just looking him in the eye and just being like, I can't do this to this animal. So I took $450 of my $600, and I flew him home to my mother. And she actually found him a home in Yak, Montana, and he actually did get to run an Iditarod. But that left me without enough gas money to get home. So, I ended up, I know it's totally cliche, I don't tell this very often, but I lived in my truck in a campground for like 3 months, just outside of Nashville. And I played an open mic night at the Boardwalk Cafe, and I met Kim Ritchie there. And we hit it off, and afterwards I was just gushing over her songwriting, and she's like, oh, that's cool, you want to write? And that was Nashville for me. And in a year and a half later, I was signed as a staff songwriter to her publishing company, to Blue Water Music.
You know, it's interesting too. You and I have both had, like, you know, you went to Nashville, but both of us have this like sense of place, you know, that is like far from those places. Like I could live in Nashville if I had to for music, but I don't think it would ever really feel like home. You know, growing up in the West, it's like that sense of space and that sense of, you know, is so profound. And I think one thing that I connected to in the blues, especially the old blues, the rural, you know, Southern blues, you know, people like Fred McDowell and Charlie Patton, is a sense of movement. You know, when I met Honey Boy Edwards, he told me that he had, you know, he would play guitar just enough to get money to gamble, and then he would cheat people at cards, and he won something like $1,500, $3,000, what was a lot of money in like 1937 in La Grande, Oregon, in like a logging camp, you know. And in a way, music was this way out of the life he was born into. And I, even though, you know, you could romanticize that, and I don't want to, but for me, you know, music has been a passport out of, you know, maybe the life I might have had otherwise, into other people's lives that might never know each other. And I want to share a song that we've been singing together on the road the last few nights. It's called Raleigh, and it's sort of a traveling song, and that sense of both place and movement was such a powerful thing for me in music.
Well, good. Let's do that then. So we're going to hear Raleigh from David Jacob Strain and Michelle McAfee accompanying. Welcome, you guys.
Outside, the night is changing from green to black to gray. Colors in my mind rearranging. I'm going to Raleigh on a train. Try my hand in your card game. I've never been the gambling kind. I guess today I'll feel lucky. I used to be a prisoner in my own mind. I'm going to Raleigh all the way, boys. I'm going to Raleigh all the way. Buy me a ticket for a train, boys. I'm going to Raleigh all the way. She says love is made of diamonds. I say it's made of glass. Sharper than a winter morning. Tonight I have no words to get it back. I'm going to Raleigh all the way, boys. I'm going to Raleigh all the way. Buy me a ticket for a train, boys. I'm going to Raleigh all the way. Hey! See me at the back of a rail car. A certain kind of silence in my eyes. Don't ask me no simple questions. I won't tell you no easy lies. You must have me mistaken for the shadow of a man whose good love you had forsaken. Would you believe I ever gave a damn? I'm going to Raleigh all the way, boys. I'm going to Raleigh all the way. Buy me a ticket for the train, boys. I'm going to Raleigh all the way. Trails are an answer without a question. The train is a question without a rail. Sometimes words lose their meaning. Tonight I'm just a pilgrim on a trail. I'm going to Raleigh all the way, boys. I'm going to Raleigh all the way. Buy me a ticket for a train, boys. I'm going to Raleigh all the way.
Really nice. Really nice. Thank you. Wow. I'd like to talk a little bit about your guitar playing just a moment. Okay, so you have a lot of styles. When I heard there was going to be this concert, it was a blues mm-hmm. guitarist concert. That's how it was. that's what someone called it. And I watched the video, and I saw that, yes, there was some slide guitar going on. But yeah. I didn't think right away, like, oh, there's the blues necessarily. But obviously you have a lot of blues in your playing, that you have some deep understanding of that. But you're playing this just like singer-songwriter type stuff with some amazing guitar technique that's going on there.
Thank you. You know, I feel that the way that I relate to music and the way that I relate to emotion in music comes from the blues, comes from, blues as feeling, blues as immediacy in music. But it's been a long time since I sat down, either tried to write a blues song or learned an old one. That's like what I was copying those old sounds, maybe not the songs or the arrangements, but trying to make the sound that made me feel a certain way. That's what I was doing when I was a teenager, when I was even younger. And at some point, I wanted to put my own... I shouldn't say I wanted to put my own stories in the music. It just sort of started to happen. And so a song like that really... Yeah, that's not a blues song. It's, I also remember, as a kid going to the folk festival. It was only a few blocks from my parents' house, and hearing Ramblin' Jack Elliott and hearing Peter Rowan, and then also hearing, listening to Stephen Stills guitar playing, and David Lindley, who played with, Jackson Browne, his approach to the slide. I think that a lot of the distinctions between different genres in American music are really made up by record labels. I mean, the idea that sort of white people played country and black people played the blues is totally a contrivance of marketing. That's unfortunate. It's almost like a colonial view of music, where people are looking for the pure culture, the true, like, idiot savant of the blues or bluegrass or old time. And in a way, like, I think that for most musicians, that it's a lot more fluid. It's not mm-hmm. it's not about, like, genre defying. That's such a cliche. It's more just that genres are sort of a made up thing that don't have as much to do with our experience mm-hmm. of playing and feeling music.
And we don't have to worry as much about those things here at KVNF, because that's the same way the music happens here. I guess there are genre-specific shows somewhat, but it's all over the board. And so
I love that.
We're in a safe zone here. The combination of the sound that you guys had last night for this concert, there was the guitar playing, there was the singing that was going on, there were the songs, all of this at a really high level, and then just the overall sound that you had, electrically, like, it was a beautiful acoustic sound, but it was all part of my enjoyment of the show was how everything was dialed in very well. You guys came with your own sound, and obviously you know what you're doing there. So
we're both kind of geeks about that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, good.
We ride around in the car and go deep nerd on how are we going to get our sound better.
Yeah, well, cool. Yeah. Well, that it comes across, and it was just made the whole evening a pleasure. You mentioned that one of the first people you heard or that kind of knocked you out was Taj Mahal, and now, I guess you were hearing Taj solo, but Jim Keltner, did he not work with Taj Mahal? Wasn't he one of his, didn't he play with him on some of his early records?
I'm not 100% certain on that, but Jim was influenced by Chuck Blackwell, who is another Oklahoma guy who played with Taj. And just this fall, I finally looked up who was playing drums on some of those early Taj records. And it's Chuck Blackwell, this guy from Oklahoma. And Chuck had kind of a storied career also, but he retired early. He had a tough time, health-wise in the music world, and he ended up creating a stained glass studio in Oklahoma. But yeah, I got to record with Jim Keltner. I worked at Sound City, which was this studio that Dave Grohl made a documentary about, and the place got sold. Kevin Agunis bought it, and I just thought, oh no, I'll never get to work there. It's going to get turned into self-storage facilities, but Kevin actually restored it, and the first thing he did there was he mixed the Lumineers record there, and his mixing console, it's very old school, and I wanted to make a record that way, sort of the way that those early Taj Mahal records were made, the way the Beatles recorded, that sort of like, late 50s through late 60s sort of recording technology and method. And I met with Kevin, he said he'd be willing to do it, and he's the one who called Jim Keltner for me.
And then in talking to Michelle, she explained to me, I said, well, so how did that come together that you were able to have this person who obviously with the Lumineers, I mean, that band just completely blew up. I mean, they were out of Denver and they were playing open mics. That was like one of their regular things. And then they just went kaboom. So I don't know, in my mind, that's something that I've tried to figure out and read about and try to figure out how did it happen that they blew up. And a lot of times you got to look at the producers or whoever was behind all of that and who they knew and how
fact,
this all
Kevin
could happen.
Kevin hadn't produced that record. They went to Ryan Hadlock, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just looking at it. I was trying to see
up in Seattle, and then they brought Kevin the record to mix, and Kevin said a lot of what, because I got to ask him about it a little bit, I said a lot of what he did was to strip away anything he thought that was extraneous. Mm. And then, you know, Kevin's a real, I sort of say he's got a difficult bedside manner. he's a tough producer. And I guess the first thing that he said to them was that the opening line of one of the hit songs to him, the melody sounded like a beer commercial, and he started singing, you know, I've been drinking a Coors Light, and made them change that melody, and then got them to go out into the ho-hays that he sort of sent them all out into the room with one mic and said, just walk around the room and sing and just don't worry about being in tune, just talk in between. Huh. And, you know, that song became a hit. And the thing is, when I first heard that, and the same thing when I heard the Valerie June record that Kevin worked on, okay, and the Edward Sharpe record, all those records had this thing where I couldn't tell what era it was made in, or if it was made in a garage or a fancy studio. Like, the vocals had an expensive sound, like that sort of sound where it's just right, that doesn't sound processed, that only comes from a truly great mic, a great singer on a great mic. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wanted to go to Kevin, because I couldn't tell, was it from the 60s? Was it new? Was it, what was it? And you know, that really attracted to me.
Well,
to that.
And so you wanted to go to him, but you don't just go to them, but you did. What, you called him or you emailed him?
I wrote him an email. You know those little widgets on the website where it says contact us, and it really means, you know, bugger off?
Yes.
You know, I wrote to him, and he wrote back. So we're
set it up for you to go play for him.
Exactly.
And then it was all agreed upon.
It was nerve-wracking. I went in there, you know, basically cold.
Good.
He hadn't Googled me. He had not listened to anything. I didn't send him anything. I thought, just going to write to him. And I went in there, and the first song I played, he did not like.
Yeah.
He stopped me in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And he said, you have anything different? There's too much slapping and popping. I can't hear the song. I might have played him Raleigh or Josephine or something.
He also would have, you know, you were coming, you'd had a record deal or a label or something in Nashville already. So you had something behind you that, and did you describe that to him? Or
I don't have
just
a record
a
deal, but I had cut a record with Ray Kennedy, who's like Steve Earle's right-hand guy. And
just your associations, though, like, had to mean something to him on some level, right?
You know, I don't know. Kevin's such an iconoclast guy. You know, at one point, one of my songs, T-Bone Burnett, was considering it for a soundtrack thing. Huh. And I told Kevin, and he said, I don't care.
Yeah.
Huh. I said, well, I just thought it was kind of cool that T-Bone liked the song. He said, do you like the song? I said, well, yeah, I mean, I wrote it, and I feel pretty good about it. And he said, that's all that matters to me. If you believe it, I couldn't care less what T-Bone thinks. Maybe he's got a competitive thing with T-Bone, but, you know,
sure.
But all along the way on this project, Kevin has just brought it back to, you know, does the song speak? Does it make you care? Is it entertaining? It doesn't matter what it's like live. It doesn't matter what T-Bone Burnett thinks or your mom thinks or anything else. What does the recording, what do we hear when we hear it back through the speakers?
All right.
What does it feel like?
And we're going to hear it. Well, let's hear. We're going to hear the song Josephine, and this is from the new record.
This is
a rough mix from
the
new
this
record.
This is like, we finished the take, and this was a live take with the band. With the bass and drums, and we haven't even mixed it yet. This is just sort of the rough. You get to hear it in the, you know.
Never been heard before. First time on KVNF right here, right now.
Josephine loves me like the 4th of July. When she's above me, my heart beats out of time. Josephine
loves me. God knows the reason why. She's got eyes like a lion, great long curly hair. She's got eyes like a lion, great long curly hair. About a noonday shadow, you won't even know it's there.
We're here on Talking Music with KVNF here. This is Bill Powers, also known as the Onarga Man. You might recognize me. I'm thrilled to be in the studio talking with David Jacob Strain and Michelle McAfee. Now, Michelle, this is not your first time here in Paonia.
No, I came through here in August with an artist named Mishkin, who has these beautiful, like, gypsy torch songs. And we kind of, not unlike this tour, we threw our music together and decided to do a tour through the Southwest and played the Blue Sage in August and been trying to get back ever since.
Yeah, and Michigan's been around here for a long time. Her and Mike, her previous partner Mike West, played our friend Rob's wedding. That was my first time to
oh,
see them
really?
As
okay.
Mike and Michigan. So oh, wow. They're just in a little barn up here on the hill. So there's a lot of history there too. And she's been back with the Ruby Warblers and various mm-hmm. Capacities here. And so how new is your record that you have out currently?
The current record I recorded a year ago in Portland. I did a remix on my first album that I recorded with David. That album was called Up in the Air. And I needed, we went to radio, to Americana and folk radio with that record. And there was one song that had one questionable word in it.
And it won't say it here.
We won't say it here. But, we went in and did a remix so that we could single that to radio. And the original studio that I recorded the first record in was not available. So I worked in a studio in Portland. And the engineer that was on that session, his name was Jeremy Scherer, and he did a brilliant job, I thought, of taking this track. We changed a few words and a couple of sentences, but he had to basically match the sound that we did on the first record with in an entirely different room and with entirely different gear when he mixed it. And he did a brilliant job at that. And we just had this really nice musical rapport. And he said, hey, if you ever want to try making a record in Portland, look me up. And so when it came time to make the record, David was touring. He was out on the road, I think, for a long time. And I can't remember exactly where you were. So I called Jeremy, and he was like, yeah, let's do this record. And he's worked a lot with the Dandy Warhols and with an indie pop band called On You, In You that I think kind of really hit mainstream indie music, whatever that is, last year. So I do have a pop side to me, because after leaving Nashville, I went to Los Angeles, and when I was writing for Warner and worked in the pop rock department out there, writing just in various different genres and with different people. And so I do have that influence. It comes more from, you know, what I would consider 70s pop or 70s bands, or, you know, like I grew up on Neil Young, who at some point was pop. Joni Mitchell at some point was pop. And to me, that's pop. That will always be pop in
it's
my
like
mind.
What's popular on the radio.
Exactly.
That's what was being played.
Exactly.
That's pop,
and,
right?
You know, that's what was being played in my house when I was growing up. So that was my understanding of pop. And so when they were like, hey, do you want to come out and write pop rock? I was like, yeah, that'd be awesome. Maybe I can meet Joni, which I in fact did, because I lived in Beverly Glen Canyon, the same canyon she lives in. And I used to walk up to the top of the canyon in the mornings and have coffee at the local coffee shop up there. And every morning at this, pretty much within 10 minutes of the same time, she would show up and sit at these black iron tables outside on the patio. She was always dressed in black, like a big black coat. Didn't matter how warm or how cold it was, a black hat, chain smoking like crazy. And no one dared ever accost her, because you knew she would just tear you to pieces. Like, she made it very clear, do not speak to me. You know, so like, that pretty much sums up my time in L.A. I saw Joni Mitchell every morning for a year and never, ever got to say one word to her. You know? So, yeah, that was kind of a bummer.
You see, it's like spitting spitballs at her from
kind of,
her
yeah, she really, she has these brutal laser eyes, you know, and it's just like you walk by her and I'm sure she's, all these years, she can feel it coming, you know, and man, she can vibe you down like nobody's business. So, yeah, anyway, I was able to explore that kind of side and that influence in what I do on this new record. And, you know, we tried to figure out, because I'm a singer-songwriter first and foremost and very influenced by folk music. And we talked a lot about, well, how do we do that on this record? And so basically I told Jeremy, I'm like, all right, you have half the record and I have half the record. And so I let him run with half the record, and the other half of the record I kind of kept close to the roots ground. And the other half of the record, Jeremy just took it to places that I would not have even known to take it or have imagined. And we got to experiment with different sounds. I actually played keys on some songs, and I've never played keys before in my life, and organ on a couple of tunes. And it was really fun and creatively felt a little liberating.
Mm-hmm. To
on one record be able to explore you know, just a little outside of the singer-songwriter folk, you know, kind of
idiom.
Fence and good, idiom that I yeah. had been kind of running around in.
So. And good on you for being open to that. I mean, obviously, like you're saying, you had there was some of that in you, too.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you took it even further than maybe what you what was in there.
Yeah, and it's kind of purposeful. It's interesting because I have this long career as a staff songwriter, but as far as making my own records and touring, I'm kind of, you know, I've only really been at it about 4 years, that part of it. And so, you know, I consider myself somewhat kind of a new artist in that way. Mm-hmm. And I really early on wanted to experiment on this record, on this second record. And it really is already the next record is, I already know what it's going to sound like.
You've got a song for us right now that you
Yeah, play. Actually, I have a song that was written when I was still in Nashville. I wrote it with my friend Van Stevenson, he was the founding member of the band Blackhawk and did all their, not all, but a lot of their songwriting. Fantastic voice. And then we lost him really early on to a pretty aggressive cancer. So about 3 years after he and I were writing a lot together, He left and left me with the gift of a couple of tunes that we wrote together and a huge catalog still in Nashville. He's had a lot of songs recorded. And this is a song that I actually love to play with David. And so, yeah, I want to play this one for you called Going Home, and it's on the first record, Up in the Air. Tuscaloosa in the middle of the night, half a tank of gas and one headlight. She left the man sleeping cause he'll be looking for a fight when he wakes up and finds that his little out of gas and across state line, oncoming blur, eyes full of tears, cause sometimes freedom cries harder.
Two, three, four, long way.
Folks, we had David Jacob Strain and Michelle McAfee here on the Talking Music program. This has been the Onargaman, Bill Powers here, talking with these folks about their fine music and their travels. And we're so glad that you tuned in today. And thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Your stories and everything. Yeah, thanks for being here. Oh, and thanks very much. Thanks to Jeff Reynolds for engineering the program. Thank you, Jeff.
Go, Jeff.
All right. Good.
All righty.
We got plenty. So then we'll get your.